Peter Schwartz be with you.
Hey there, comic book fans, sci-fi lovers, and all you space ballers out there. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, and this is it. Today, I am wrapping up my trilogy of tremendous episodes featuring my conversations with some of the amazing guests at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Hope you caught the first two parts. If you didn't, you're going to want to go back after you listen to today's show and check out my chats with Gotham's Poison Ivy, Maggie Gia, superstar artists Adam Hughes and Ty Templeton, and John Ratzenberger from Superman, Superman 2, The Empire Strikes Back, of course, Cheers, and all the Pixar films. And I hope you caught that bonus episode that I managed to sneak in on you that Wednesday, a couple days ago. That's where I took a trip to Riverdale to talk with one of the stars of that series, Marisol Nichols. She plays Veronica's mom, Hermione Lodge, on the show. So I got that episode in there as well for the season two premiere of Riverdale, for all you Riverdale fans out there. So lots to listen to this week. If you missed any of it, I know there's a lot of content coming at you. You know where to find those episodes. My website, comicbookcentral.net. Subscribe to the show in iTunes. Man, if you're there in iTunes, leave a review. Always appreciate that. A lot to review this week. So if you liked what you're hearing, leave a five-star review. Always appreciate it. Follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, Blueberry and Stitcher, it's out there as well. Google Play. A lot of ways you can catch up with Comic Book Central. So if you missed any of those episodes, they are out there. All right, today it's part three of my trip to the Cincinnati Comic Expo, and we are closing things out with a celebration. That's right. This year is the 30th anniversary of Mel Brooks' classic sci-fi spoof, Spaceballs. In Cincinnati, I got to moderate a Q&A with the incredibly lovely and terrifically talented star of Spaceballs, Princess Vespa herself, Daphne Zuniga.
You hold him off. I'll get the door.
I'm shooting this thing. I hate guns. My hair. He shot my hair. How was that?
Not bad.
Not bad for a girl.
Hey, that was pretty good for Rambo.
Hey, who knew she'd be so awesome with a laser rifle in that flick, right? That was a fun scene. We're going to be talking about that. Great flick, 30 years. We're hoping to get Spaceballs 2 at some point. We're going to talk about that as well. Plus, her first flick, again, another comedy classic, The Sure Thing, directed by Rob Reiner, starring John Cusack and Daphne. Melrose Place, we're going to talk a little bit of Melrose Place as well. So lots to get to. So let's get to it. Here is my Cincinnati Comic Expo Q&A with Daphne Zuniga.
Is everybody in a celebratory mood today? 30th anniversary of Spaceballs. I can't believe it's been 30 years already. Look, let's talk to her. She's here right now. Daphne Zuniga, bring her up.
You got the comfy couch. Look, if you want me to put you on the couch and psychoanalyze, yeah, tell me all about your parents. Tell me about your fears, your dreams, your aspirations. What makes you tick, Daphne Zuniga?
Oh, God. You don't really want to know that.
Yeah, I do. Well, we certainly got the time for it. That's the whole point of this. What sparked the interest in performing? How young were you? What inspired you? Did you see, like, a movie or TV show that, like, really got you stoked?
No, I think... We didn't have a TV when I was a kid, so I was brought up by a couple hippie parents and no TV, and so my sister and I would do skits all the time, or we'd be outside in the yard or down in the neighborhood and just really making up stuff. Back in the day before devices, so our imagination was always going.
What were you making up? Like just... I mean, things you read, like,
Nancy Drew, yeah. So for a while, we lived in Vermont, New England, and we had this huge forest in the back of our house, and I was Nancy Drew, and we'd come up with stuff behind the trees, and then we would use a tape recorder and do little radio shows, and so there's just a lot of, like, active imagination going on, and then... I remember when it was actually a thing, drama class, and they would do all these imagination games, and then I got cast as Baby Bear, and it was uphill from there.
How old were you at that point then?
Baby Bear was actually in junior high. I was kind of an old Baby Bear.
Okay.
But yeah.
But you played young, though. You could play young.
Yeah, I could play young.
That was
right.
The great part about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it? Was it like the instant feedback you got from the audience? Was it just like, so you do something and you get a reaction and you're like, oh, I like that. That's pretty cool.
The first part of what I liked was not being me, making up, like playing these different characters. I think the other part that added to that was that my parents divorced when I was six and I never wanted to be home. It was like a cold, empty, mom was working, dad wasn't there, I never wanted to be, no TV. So like, who wants to be home? And so I would love being in a play so I could stay at school all day, rehearse, and I just found that at 13, I think. And I was in the theater department ever since.
Did that give you sort of a sense of family, almost?
Yes.
In that? See, I told you we'd have you on the couch. I knew we'd,
yeah,
get, we knew we'd dig
God,
deep. I'm
really
telling you
is.
Why. Tell me about all
Actually,
these
I've
issues.
I've been in therapy for a long time, so no tears are coming.
Is there anybody in Hollywood that isn't, though? I think
yeah,
that's
no.
That's a pretty much a thing there.
Yeah.
You, go there, so.
You take your vitamins, you do your green juice, and you have to have a therapist.
So what were some, so were you doing theater? Were you doing commercials? What were some of those early roles? And then sort of take us up to The Sure Thing.
I never did a commercial. I was doing theater at UCLA, so I was in plays there. And actually, I remember doing a play and playing a very sexy character with like a leopard thing and leather pants. And a commercial agent, I guess, came to watch me, what we were doing, and he came up after me and asked me to come to their office to perhaps represent me, and I was like, oh my God, an agent, you know, it's a big deal. So I went there just as me, and he was like, oh, you look different. And I'm thinking, it's acting, that was a play,
yeah.
And I was like, oh. You know, and then he had me read copy from like McDonald's, like as a kid. It's kind of like, you know, you get into these situations where you go, wow, this is an odd business. Like, it's just nothing's normal. And that was one of them I remember. And so I didn't do those commercials. And leading up to that, so I was at UCLA doing theater. And I was doing a scene with my roommate at the time for some one-act competitions that were different universities around the whole country were doing them. So we did this one scene, we did really well, and she got an appointment with an agent, and she said, will you, she was in a play at UCLA, and since we were roommates, she said, will you come to a scene, our scene, for this agency. And we went in and we did it and we set it up in there. We did props, we had cookies, we had the whole thing.
Do you remember what the scene was?
It was called Album, and I don't remember the guy who wrote it, but it was really kind of a popular play back then.
Okay.
In the early 80s. And so we went into these agents, writers and artists, and they signed us both. We got home.
Oh, wow.
And there was a sign on the chalkboard from our other roommates saying, you both got signed. And I didn't even know that. I thought we were just going for her. So I didn't know that, you know.
So you fell into it.
I fell into it after.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that was great. And then I just started, they send you out to, you know, meet casting agents all over town.
So how soon after that was The Sure Thing?
My first year out.
The Sure Thing was... That had to be trippy for you.
It was amazing. That year was a good year.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Again, Hollywood likes new people. They like the new girl on the block. They like you. They love to discover you, right? So I worked every single month that year. I was doing... I started out with Family Ties. I did Vision Quest for Warner Brothers. I think I ended with The Sure Thing. I did a horror movie, my first movie, first time I, you know, traveled to go do a movie on set.
So you were doing everything. I mean, all different kinds of
genres.
I remember Family Ties, because I was a huge Family Ties fan. I just loved Michael J. Fox on that. And I remember those episodes, and then it was like right around the same time with The Sure Thing, too. And I was like, yeah. Oh, that was the Family Ties, too.
In fact, I was on Family Ties. They were making me a regular to be his girlfriend. And then I got The Sure Thing. Oh. And my agent said, would you, you know, let her out of that to go do this movie she'll star in? And
so was this the role that ultimately went to Tracy Pollan?
Yes, it did.
Wow, so you almost could have been married to Michael J. Fox? Or is,
well,
that how, is that how? It doesn't work like
it.
That. Yeah, I don't know.
I was going to say I should get credit for that meeting and fall in love.
Did they ever give you credit for that?
No.
Okay, well.
That's all right.
She put you in a Michael J. Fox movie or something, you know?
Yeah,
Spin City. I don't think you were on Spin City.
I was on Spin City.
Were you on? Okay, I'm trying
and
to remember.
And I knew Michael from doing that, okay. And then we stayed in touch for, you know, other friends around and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I did, Gary David Goldberg, who did Family Ties, called me, whatever, 15 years later to do Spin City.
Oh.
He said, Daphne, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, skiing or snowboarding somewhere. And he goes, I want you to come to New York and do this thing with Spin City. And I was like, yes, instantly. Like, I didn't, you know, I just loved working with Michael. I loved working with Gary Vee and Goldberg.
That comedy force of just timing, and you had to have learned so much from that at an early age, too.
Yeah. Well, so when I was doing Spin City, Michael J. Fox says, I had this wonderful line about, I don't remember what it was, but it was so good. And he said, and I was doing well, but he leaned over and he goes, if you wait one more beat, you'll bring the house down. One beat. Like, So I did. And it did.
He was a master.
A master. Like, it was comedy like that. You know, Mel Brooks, I know we're going to get to that, but was like that too. They really know.
Yes.
And if they're generous, they share those secrets with you.
Yeah.
It's a look. It's pacing. It's, you know, reactions.
It's almost math. Too. I mean, there's almost like a mathematical equation when you talk to some of the top. Because when you watch Michael J. Fox on Family Ties, especially when he's talking to Mallory, you know, Mallory, and he just has those beats, those just wait, and then the audience just fills all that in.
Yep.
And then he hits the punchline. Yeah, to me. That's a comedy lesson right there for you early on.
Totally.
And then to go into Mel Brooks, too. Skipped over The Sure Thing. You know, we wanted to ask you about The Sure Thing. They always talk about special skills on a resume for actors. Can you still shotgun a beer?
I never actually. That was the magic of Hollywood. So
okay, I was wondering how many takes for that one.
I think we go back and there's a take, there's a scene of me snapping the beer.
Right.
And then I think there's a cut
there's
to
an editor. Okay.
My boyfriend. And he's like going, or something. And then it cuts back to me, like, gulp, 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 gulp.
That's acting.
So in that cut, they just gave me a little bit of the beer at the end, so I didn't have to do
okay.
However, I don't know if John Cusack has ever done these things, but John and Tim would go and really shoot shotgun of those damn things. And, that's a whole other
But you
story.
Never did one, though.
No, I never.
You never did. And no desire to do one after?
No.
Okay, just curious.
Please.
It seems so good.
And I think the burp, though, that burp was like...
That was actual.
I think I probably was off camera, like, you know, doing the soda water or something and jumping up and down. I'm like, okay, shoot it, ready?
Well, we're talking 30th anniversary. Can you believe 30 years for Spaceball? I mean, this is... Just take us through the process of getting cast in that film. And you know the history. I mean, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, that had to have just been like, okay, I've got to get in this no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I think, the year after The Sure Thing came out. And Rod Reiner, of course, is very good friends with Mel Brooks because his father, they were best friends, Carl Reiner. So I think Rob told Mel, you got to see this girl that I just worked with.
Oh, perfect.
So I went in to meet Mel, and... of course, I was nervous, and his big office there on MGM, and he was so sweet and like, oh, you're perfect, you're my princess. He'd come up, do the hands on the cheek.
My Jewish princess, yeah.
Like, you're perfect. And he showed me around the set. We looked at, like, what would be my spaceship, the car, the...
So you've got it? Is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
But
I
don't have it. But so I leave there going, was that an audition? Do I have it? Did he do that with 12 other princesses? What's happening? And so I said to my agents, I go, I think, they go, how did it go? And I'm like, I think it went really well. He showed me the sets. He introduced me to the costumer. He, like, said I was perfect.
This is where you'll be? I mean, he's saying, yeah.
Yeah, this is, he said, this is your, da-da-da. And so they're like, well, you don't have an offer. So I'm like, really? So then he brings me back again. And I go back again. He's showing me more. And I think the whole time he's watching me. And he's like, oh. And it's like this whole, and a month went by. And I'm like, agents, I'm pretty sure I have this. And they're like, well, there's no official offer coming. I'm like, this guy is torturing me. And so finally, like a month later, I don't know what, I still to this day, I don't know what.
You never asked him, like, what it was that, okay. Something in that conversation then, he was probably just gauging how you reacted to things.
Well, I think so, and I think that he, you know, Mel does things the way he does them, and on his time, and I think he also had a lot of other elements he had to figure out, you know. He's like, yeah, and then he was just off doing, I mean, our sets were incredible. Again, in the 80s, you know, the budgets were much bigger than they are now, and the time that you take to shoot a movie was, you know, a few months, not just a month.
And practical sets, not all CGI. I mean, everything, if you did that today, it'd probably be all CGI.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys are actually working off of stuff and puppets and things for you to react to and things like that.
That's right.
Just what was the best piece of direction that Mel Brooks gave to you?
Well, obviously he knew comedy so well, and I didn't. And so I think because I played a character who was very straight and the serious one, he kept telling me to trust it. Like, he's like, trust me. Without you bouncing off of, going back and forth, like, you know, you're part of the comedy, so keep trusting that, and just play your character. And I kept saying, wait, can I say something funny here, Mel? Can I do something funny? And he's like, no, you might be the princess. And Tuesday I'll see Mel, and he'll be like, oh. And of course, when he met my fiance, we went to his AFI celebration of Mel a couple of years ago, and he met David, and he said, oh, nice to meet you. You don't deserve her. You're very, very lucky. You know, and I'm like, thank you.
Nice.
Mel.
Nice.
Well,
that's an important piece, though, too, because the fact is, if everybody's saying something wacky, there's really nothing for it to play off
that's
of.
Right.
So, you know, you think about Abbott and Costello, it's like, Abbott had to be the straight guy, and that, you know, Costello for something for the jokes to bounce off of. So that
Absolutely.
Was, and that's tough. That's not always easy to do.
No,
especially when everybody's getting all the cool lines. I would imagine.
Oh, it was hard, and plus, you know, I was so young and new at it, and I'm working with all these masters, right? John Candy and Rick Moranis and Mel, and it was just like, if I don't do something funny, like, I didn't know if I still had to prove myself, like.
Yeah.
No one's laughing at me. Are they going to fire me? Like, I was like, can I do something so that we know that I belong here?
Yeah.
But he just kept assuring me. And then I did get one thing finally in, and I'm so glad that I've heard that he's given me credit for this moment, but it's when the guys are coming after us and we have to run off to escape, and I don't say I don't like guns. Ew, I don't like guns. And then he wanted me to, like, get in the Winnebago. And I was like, can I do something, Mel? And he's like, no,
begging.
You don't like guns. And I go, well, if they shot my hair, I would not allow that. And he's like, and I said, what about this? They shoot my hair. And I'm like, what? They shot my hair. And so I did that whole bit, and he loved it.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, and this is, again, no CGI. So we had squibs. Little explosives in my hair, wires down the back, through the dress, under the thing, out to this guy over in the corner going,
it's all floating up in your hair.
Oh, yeah.
Any mishaps? No, I mean,
no mishaps, no hair.
Okay, because I'm sure there's a lot of hairspray, and pyrotechnics doesn't really go well with that, I wouldn't imagine. So
that was also interesting because, you know, you have the pressure of getting the timing right and the way that you set it, and explosives, and I mean, the thing about comedy that I've learned is that, you know, it seems so free and like improv, but it's not. And it's subtle. The people that we love, the great comics, they know what they're doing. You know, I also got to work with Lucille Ball, who, it wasn't a comedy, it was her last movie, and she played a bag woman, and I played a social worker. But, you know, her timing, her commitment, her, we would sit on the set there, and she would just tell me stories, and the crowds would gather on the streets of New York, you know, around the, behind the tape. I mean, just like hundreds of people. And she goes, honey, that's what you get for raising three generations. This is back in the 80s, so it's only three generations now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that, it's not just free flow. It's just not. It's that wonderful, invisible timing, how you say something, where you put the emphasis, and that's why, you know, that's why we love comics, because some part of us knows, I think, that it's something special. It's not as easy as just cracking a joke.
Comedy's hard. Comedy's hard. Especially when you think about Mel Brooks' scripts, too, because the wording is so specific on those jokes. I mean, think, you know, going back. When were you a Star Wars fan when you took the role? Like, did you get everything that he was doing? Because there's so many jokes
so
in there.
Many,
I mean, it's just like rapid fire.
I had just seen it, right? Just the once when I was younger as a kid. And I wasn't that huge of a fan, so I have to admit I did not get all of the jokes that were in there.
Like the Yoda references and all the different things.
I got a little bit of the Yoda.
A little bit, okay.
Yeah. So. But I didn't have to get them because it was so fun for me to watch Mel, who just loves what he does. I mean, he just loves it, and he loves the fans. We would be out to dinner. When we were shooting the desert scene, we shot that. We had to stay overnight in Yuma, Arizona, or Yuma, California. We're right on the border there, Arizona, California, mm-hmm. middle of nowhere. And, you know, people would come up to him at dinner time, and I always thought, well, you're supposed to be like, no, leave me alone. And he's like, come here. I mean, we would hardly get time with him because he'd chat with everybody and the kids. And he kept telling everyone on the set, because it was long days, it was a difficult, technically difficult shoot. And Mel would always say, hey, we're here for the kids. We're going to make him laugh. That's the only reason we're all here. Hello, kid in the front row. Baseball is for you and the kid and all of us, you know. But he kept touching us, kept getting us to be happy. He was so happy while doing it.
It's so nice to hear that because, you know, you always think about your idols and people that you look up to and things like, well, what is he like, he or she like, in real life? And it's so nice to hear those stories that they're just like, they just want to be with people and talk to them, and they're just like regular folks. So it's nice to hear those.
Yeah. I mean, there's a joy. If you're going to last that long in this business, which is a very hard business, you have to love what you do. And also, I mean, you know, it's also about being a pro. Like, Lucille Ball was a pro. I mean, she, you know, she was serious about stuff. But I remember being on a set with her. Do you mind if I go into a Lucille Ball story?
Please do.
Okay. So we
always love a good Lucille Ball story.
I love a good Lucy story.
She gave us Star Trek. We have Star Trek because of Lucille Ball. So we love Lucille Ball.
Oh, yeah?
It was Desilu Studios. Yeah,
oh,
Desilu Studios, yeah. She cut the checks.
Amazing. Yeah. This woman, and she said, honey, if you want to last, two things. One, keep moving and don't make eye contact. You know, and that voice, she's always the...
By then, it was really raspy.
Oh, my God. And when I met her, she had the stain, that lipstick stain above her lip from all those years of the lead in the lipstick. It was stained. They had to cover it with, you know, makeup.
Wow.
And then the other thing she said was 10-minute power naps. You got to learn how to do that.
Okay. Do you still do that?
No.
Okay.
I never did that. I fall asleep for 10. I've been exhausted on sets before, and I'll fall asleep, and they're like banging on the door, you know.
Sure. Listen to Lucille Ball. Those years ago, I know she could have given you that.
Yeah. But, you know, we were shooting in Port Authority. It was exhausting. It was hot. And she had layers of clothes on, and she, in fact, fainted. And so we're in the middle of shooting the scene, and I'm having a line to her, and she just kind of like falls
dead
on the
weight.
Floor.
Oh.
And I was like, I thought she was improv. I thought she was improvising. I'm like, oh, she wants, okay, I guess we're going to go off into unknown territory here. So I start still saying her character name, right? And I'm like, Clara. Clara? I'm like, Lucy? And they're all going, what's happening? I'm like, she's fainted. So they're cut. Of course, they call the ambulance because she's 76 at the time. And the ambulance come and they bring her up. They give her smelling salts to bring her to. George Schaefer, the director, was like, let's call it a day. Let's call it a day. We'll come back and get this. But we were in Port Authority. We only had it for one day. She comes to and they're taking the lights down. And she's like, George, what are you doing? We gotta get the rest of the day. And he's like, no, Lucy. Like, he didn't want to kill Lucy at all. I certainly don't want anything with that. I'm like, oh, there goes my career.
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you mean? We gotta finish the day. Set these lights back up. And we set the lights, because she's a producer.
Yeah.
She set the lights back up and we finished the scene.
Yeah. You can't run Desilu Studios all those years and not
know.
No.
You learn from people like that.
Wow.
You learn the real side of it all, so that you don't get all whacked out when real life.
Hopefully the rest of the shoot went a little better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, other than me almost getting fired for laughing at her because she was Lucy and she had this face.
Oh, you were cracking up between
two. Well, yeah. She had this scene where she was had this parsley. She was a bag lady, and she was eating parsley out of the garbage, and she comes up, and I'm like, Clara? And she goes, and all I saw was Lila Lucy. And
you've seen every episode go through, right?
Well, I used to write fan letters to her when I was little. I wrote her letters, and so...
You were geeking out.
I was... geeking out, and I had to be professional, so I never told her I was wrote her letters, because I wanted to be like a peer.
Yeah.
So they cut. They're like, "What's happening?" And Lucy goes, "What's the matter?" And I'm like, "Oh my god!" Like, I'm the only person that thought she was joking. She was serious. So anyway, the director said, "Are you okay? Can you?" And I'm like, thinking I'm fired. And then Lucy was so sweet. She came over and she's just like, oh, honey, I would have done the same. I'm saving that for my home wheel. Thank God. I never laughed again. To this day, I will not laugh. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a lesson learned from Lucy Ball. Take your 10-minute power naps.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got a lot of questions from the audience. So if you guys want to, there's a microphone right over here. So if you've got some Spaceballs questions, if you've got some Sure Thing questions, some Melrose questions.
Melrose, I don't know if we have any Melrose.
Good morning, Daphne.
Hi.
My comment is, wow, what a cast. I mean, that how you get that many talented folks looking back now is really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But my question pertains to one of them, one of my favorites. Do you have any, well, I do, what's one or two of your fondest memories? Of one of my favorite, of course, Gone Too Soon, was John Candy.
Yeah, really Gone Too Soon. John was a heart of gold. Like, so everyone loved him. I just read recently that Bill Pullman did an interview in the New York Times, and he talked about how John pulled him aside, had him come into his trailer, and kind of helped him out because he was having issues with, Mel, I think, and their style. Bill Pullman had come from theater, and I think Mel had a different thing in mind. But anyway, I just read that John Candy was like, come on in here, making him feel great, and just helping him out and stuff. And I know, for me, he also would assure me about the comedy, to like, hey, you're doing great, and that kind of thing. Like, trust me, it's okay. But, he also would be like, John Candy, hilarious, riffing, and then they'd be like, action, and I'm like, everyone else gets to, I had to go... I'd be like, John, will you please not keep... He'd be like improvising all over the place, with the ears and the tail, and we'd be in there. And you get so happy when you're in a Winnebago that long on set, like 12 hours a day with Mel Brooks and these people going nuts. And we'd just be like, that was the hardest thing, was keeping a straight face. But and then at the end, he gave our crew was probably 200 people. He gave every single one a bone spray gold with a plaque with our name on it that said, "Love, John."
Nice.
Every single person on the crew.
Nice.
That's the kind of guy that John was.
My question was, who is your favorite actor or actress you've worked with that is, I knew John Candy and things like that are producers, one that Melrose Place, the producer died. Which style of directing and things like that has directed you in the right direction in the later years of your career?
Oh, in the later years. I think I really came to it with eyes open. And, I mean, everyone. Back in the early years, you know, even just with Rob Reiner, when I see him now, you know, he said to us, which I never forgot, we don't know if the movie's going to be a hit or not. You know, you invest at least a month of your time, sometimes three, and we got to have a good time. We have to all get along, we have to enjoy ourselves, because nobody knows if it's going to be a hit. It could be a flop, and then that's it. All we have is this time together. And to this day, that's how I feel on a set, because you just never know. I mean, Melrose Place was a fluke, but that was a hit. That was about to be canceled. The first year, ratings were terrible, and Darren Starr, who created it, was my roommate in college, and you know, called me up one day and said, "Hey, I'm doing the TV show." I hadn't even done a TV show before that, and he said, "You know, will you come be a new character on the show?" And it's a really fun thing. And so I said, you know, I said yes, because I got to act every single day. You do movies and there's time in between, you know, but what I love about TV is that you get to do what you love to do, like, every day. And so, you know, that was going to be canceled. And it, because nothing, they didn't have anything to lose anymore because they were going to cancel the storyline, they started writing these crazy storylines. And then people started watching it. So then 5 years later, you know, it just became a huge thing. So I just, you know, I just really love and appreciate and learn a lot from people who are professional about it, but know how lucky we are that we get to do what we love. And that just kind of solid personality is what I really respond to. So it really is just a whole mix of people all along.
I do know that Mel Brooks and Rick Moranis are still trying to get Spaceballs 2 off the ground. If that ever happens, we look forward to seeing you back as a show.
Oh, yeah. Queen, I'll be a queen. Well, I ran into his writing partner, Tommy Meehan, and he said, "I think you'd be a queen now." I said, "I think you're right, Tommy. Well, you can't write it already."
My one question is, I do know that over the process of creating the costume and the props and everything, sometimes things are created that are basically only good for one person, so you just wind up getting the tank with you. So I have to ask, did you get to keep the best damn pair of headphones of Galaxy?
I did not. Oh, yeah. No, I wish I had. I wish I had. I have a feeling probably Mel or MGM. I had the, like, first dibs on everything. I got a few things. You know the merchandising shop that's, you know, yogurt, like, I think I got, like, a plate.
They went straight to yogurt for merchandising.
Yeah, merchandising. I got some of that merchandising. I think I got a mini-me. A little princess doll.
What have you? Okay, you still have it?
Yeah, I have a couple of things in somewhere. Yeah. I have the memories, you know what I mean? It's like, those things kind of, like, fade, but I felt so lucky. I had a birthday in that outfit on the set with the dinks running around, and I'm like, it can't be better than this. And then the craft service brings,
it is her day.
Yes, exactly. And then the craft service brought in this little cake from, like, the grocery store they found out in the desert somewhere, and I'm like, here, happy birthday. And I'm like, oh, that too. Thank
You're
you.
Never going to forget that one.
Yeah.
If you were laying odds on it, where would you put for Spaceballs 2?
I know they want to.
Yeah.
I know they want
to. We want them to.
We want them to.
Yeah.
I heard Mel wanted Rick to come out to do it. So if you say that Rick's trying to do it, then I would say odds are up. If we
Is that the sticking point, maybe? Because he doesn't do much acting.
No, he doesn't.
He's pretty much retired. But
right.
Is that the, he's waiting on a script? Is
I heard that Mel said, if I can get Rick to do it. But I do know, I am pretty sure they're working on a deal. So.
Okay. That's all we need. That's just a little hope. That's all we need. That's all we need.
Twitter. Tweet him, for God's sake.
It's not like they don't have plenty of material to work with.
Star Wars is back. I mean, we got Star Wars back. We've got to get Spaceballs back.
I know. And this is the time.
This is the time. So thanks. Next question.
Thank you very much. Thanks. I'm a big fan of Spaceballs. Unfortunately, it's my second favorite Mel Brooks movie. With the producers being first, but just seeing, like, as the 80s, 90s, and 2000s have come about, do you think, like, was some of the jokes from some of Mel Brooks' great movies that they really were, like, self-censored themselves and they tried to put it out now? Because I saw something recently about Mel Brooks saying it's like, all this PC culture is the death of comedy or something like that.
Did you guys read that recently?
Yeah. So you couldn't make Blazing Saddles today. Yeah. There's no way. You couldn't make All in the Family today. You're talking about Rob Reiner.
Yeah. I mean, remember the where they're combing the desert? And he has that afro comb? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting reading that. Obviously, you know, PC can be so limiting and so PC, and I'm, you know, I want to be nice to people. I think people should be nice to others, but it does get so confusing. I imagine if, like, comics like to be on the edge, that's what shocks us and makes us laugh, you know, so I agree with that kind of his statement, and I don't think they could have. I think he probably couldn't have gotten away with stuff.
I'm dying to see if he's going to go full Mel Brooks with Spaceballs too.
He will.
Because that would be...
He totally will.
Because, I mean, you know, he'd be like, I'm Mel Brooks, I can do what I want.
Yeah, he will. And, you know, he's getting up there. He's like, I'm going to go out with... I'm going to do what I want to do. Yeah. No one's ever told me. I don't care. I'm sure people will love him for it.
We're really stoked for it. I just can't wait to see what he brings to the table. We got the Dark Knight here.
Hello, Dark Knight.
How are you acting? Did you ever get a chance to meet Carrie Fisher or hear what she thought about the film? Because we talked about great comedic minds, and she had a great comedic mind herself.
I did meet her once. I went to see her do her one-woman show, Wishful Drinking. Mm. And I went backstage up in her dressing room, and she just said, because she knew I was coming or something. And I had never met her. It was years and decades later. And she just said, you're me! Hey, look at you! All right, get that kind of like, but I think she's brilliant. She was just, I saw Postcards from the Edge and like everything she wrote in her mind and her one-woman show, you know, I mean, battling addiction and stuff with her mother, and it was really incredible. To turn your life that was so traumatic and painful into art is a true talent that she had. Yeah.
It would be nice to see if you're able to do like an homage.
Maybe.
If they have a sequel.
I love that we're talking about the sequel like it's happening.
I can't imagine it's not. I mean, it's look, just somebody get Rick Moranis on the phone.
Yeah.
Just give him a call. Yeah, he'll come back. He just did Strange Brew. Bob and Doug McKenzie came out for a charity event. So he brought that. Yeah, you never know.
Okay.
Just attach a charity to it,
and then
maybe he'll come
out. Positive
thinking. Yes. We will have Spaceballs too. Next question.
I absolutely loved The Sure Thing when I was younger. That's what introduced me to you. But my question was, you said you were getting into directing. Mm. And what genre would you be going towards? And do you find it hard going from being an actor to a director?
Well, I don't know yet, because I'm going to start. See, the thing is, I didn't think about directing, but about a year ago, I was on a set, and a DP came up to me and said, have you ever directed? And I said, no. And he said, well, you should. And I said, are you trying to say I'm bossing? Like, am I bossing on the set? And he's like, no. You just automatically, you know, after 30-something years being on the set, you just kind of know. And I was helping other people on the set, and he said I was helping him. And so I thought about it. Like, I do have a lot of ideas. And as an actor, you don't, you know, if you come bringing all of your ideas on the set, it kind of takes up time, and you have to have a really, you know, receptive director that listens to them all. So, at any rate, I reached out to, I'm going to start shadowing a TV show, shadowing some directors, and we're going to, you know, see how that goes. So, really the genre, I think I'll be most comfortable doing TV, and probably drama, but I think it's going to be a step-by-step thing. So I have an opportunity to get onto a drama right now, which I'll start doing, and, you know, I've already started my homework and stuff, but we'll see if someone, if I can, you know, reach out to a comp, you know, someone who does comedy, I'd love to do that too. So, So far I haven't done it, I don't know. But I do know that, you know, I want to keep going. And parts for women, as I know women are supposedly working a lot, but it is hard because I feel like there's so many outlets now that no matter what you've done in the past, it's kind of like they don't really, it's not really an asset as much as it used to be. So they'll get someone from a YouTube channel or something, or, you know, and I have no problem playing the moms. I play a lot of moms. I even played a grandmother once on Wonder Hill. But it was an infant and it was a stretch. But at any rate, but I know that directing, it doesn't, you know, if you're good at it, we'll see if I am or not. I think I'll enjoy it.
Just wanted to say, you're just really great in Spaceballs. I remember watching that movie over and over when I was a kid. And second of all, I was kind of curious, the movie Fly 2 is a completely different movie from Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm.
What was your, like, the grossest memory you had of that movie? And did it gross you out when you saw it in the theater?
Yes. Well, it grossed me out when I saw it on the set every day. It was just gross. And again, it was practical makeup and special effects there. So, and Chris Wallace, who was the head of ILM, was hired to direct it, and Mel produced it. So Mel is the one who said, "Will you come do the Fly 2 for me?" And I said, "Sure." And but you know, with all the gooey stuff and the sticky stuff and all his slime and the shedding, and Eric Stoltz, you know, was so into it. He just like loved it. And I was just like, ugh. I'm like, are you sure I have to still be in love with this thing? Like, you know, I'm a devoted, you know, kind of girlfriend, but, you know.
Questioning life choices at that point. Yeah.
And it was a lot of waiting around for that kind of thing. We're waiting, the proper molting of the thing, and the... I signed an autograph today that said, I quoted from it, "You're getting worse, and you can't walk." And, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, those days. So, yeah, they were quite different. And I shot, Spaceballs, and I went right to do, that was my next movie. Fly 2. But that's what I love about acting. It's, like, all over the place. Hi.
I did watch you in Spaceballs, but I also watched you in Melrose Place in One Tree Hill. So I was kind of wondering, in terms of playing different roles and playing the ingenue or playing the mother, or I didn't think about your grandmother, but your grandmother, I was just kind of wondering, what your take on each of those roles, or which kind you prefer, and maybe which one you'd rather do in the future?
I mean, they were so different. When I was doing Melrose Place, you know, I was so young and into the drama. I mean, I really... And so were the writers, obviously, writing all these, like, situations. And I, again, I got to act every day, and we were all friends on the set, so it was just great. Like, we'd all be getting along, and then we'd have to, oh, we got to go hit our marks and, like, hate each other, you know? So I really loved doing that, because it was when I was, like, it was my first TV show, so it became this huge hit. It was this whole phenomenon that, you know, was new, and I was so young that it was very different from being on One Tree Hill, where I got to play a total evil, okay, kid in the front, close your ears, any kids, close your ears, biatch.
Thank you for keeping it family friendly.
That was so fun. It was so fun to play. Hard sometimes, you know, things I would say to Sophia is, my daughter, I'd have to like hug her afterwards because I said such evil things to her. But I loved playing her. Yeah. And there's not really a transition. People say, you know, what it's like to play a mom. It's really the same. You're a character, you know, only you say you have a daughter or son. So it's really just the characters. Hope I see you all this afternoon at my booth.
I was going to say that, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, right. But we're going to see you the rest of the day. You're going to be downstairs signing. Happy 30th anniversary.
Thank you again.
Thank you for being here in Cincinnati, and have a blast all weekend.
Daphne
Zuniga, everybody.
All right, that was fun, I got to admit. Had a blast talking to Daphne. Great questions from the crowd there. A lot of variety there, too. Yeah, and some Spaceballs and some Melrose Place. So, a lot of cool stuff. Look, I don't know. It's sounding more and more to me like we might be getting Spaceballs, too. Here's the quote from Mel Brooks. It was back in May. Here's what he said. He said, MGM is slightly interested in doing it because of Star Wars Rogue One and The Force Awakens. and the new Star Wars explosion. Says he responded to cheers from the audience, and he said, so they think maybe, so we're talking, who knows? Yeah, who knows? Hopefully Mel Brooks knows. What we do know is that we all want to see it. We all want Daphne Zuniga back in it, this time as Queen Vespa. That would be awesome. Sounds like she's stoked for it. Sounds like a lot of people are stoked for it. So look, if it happens, you're going to find out on her social media pages. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net. I'm going to put links to Daphne on social media in there. So if it happens, you're going to find it there. Also, links to Cincinnati Comic Expo online. I'm going to put that in there as well. So check it out, comicbookcentral.net, the show notes for this episode. All right, quick mention, folks. We are rapidly approaching the fourth anniversary of Comic Book Central. And you know what that means. My anniversary show giveaway, and I am cooking up something very special. An incredibly talented comic book artist and listener of the Lair. He tells me he likes to have it on in the background while he's drawing. Lynn Workman. A lot of you folks out there see him on Facebook. He is cooking up something special for the fourth anniversary show. I will tell you this. It's original art. It is a sketch cover. It features one of my special guests from this past year. It's a series of images of one of that guest's most famous roles. Okay, there's a lot of clues there. It could be yours. That giveaway could be yours. More details on next week's show and in the weeks ahead, so you don't want to miss any episodes. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter. I'm going to put details on there as well. So stay tuned, kids. Good stuff is heading your way with the fourth anniversary special. No trick. Did I just give something away there? I think I may have. By the way, be sure to check out Lynn's blog, havegeekwilltravel.com. There you're also going to find a link to his website as well. So good stuff out there from Lynn. All right, with that, I wrap up my adventures at the Cincinnati Comic Expo for yet another year. Big thanks to Julian Glover, Maggie Gija, Adam Hughes, Ty Templeton, John Ratzenberger, Daphne Zuniga, Andrew Satterfield, Matt Bredesteggy, and the entire crew at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Man, those folks do a lot of work. Hey, let's do this again next year, kids, all right? What I will be doing very soon is, of course, welcoming another amazing guest here into the Lair. In fact, next week on Comic Book Central, is there a doctor in the house? Now, there will be when I welcome the chief medical officer on board Deep Space Nine. Now, these days, he's hanging out in Gotham City as Batman's future nemesis, Ra's al Ghul. Next week, he's going to be hanging out right here in the Comic Book Central Lair. I'm going to be chatting with Alexander Siddig next week. You don't want to miss it. Star Trek, Gotham talk, so much more. Lot to talk about with Alexander. Until then, may the Schwartz be with you. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Okay, all right, we're going to have to use a towel here. This could get very messy if you don't know what you're doing. All right, this is called shotgunning a beer. It's an ancient tribal custom. Originated in Southeast Asia, I believe. Okay, take the beer, right? Mm-hmm. Poke a hole in it, as I will do now. All right, uh-huh. Using any household appliance. I'm using a pen. Okay, make it just big enough to fit your mouth over it. And 86 the pen. And then in one swift, you got it, or listen to me, it's very important. In one swift, deft motion, you're gonna take it, pull it up, and then release the cork, not the cork, this thing, and all the beer will slide down right to your throat in like 2 seconds. It'll be great. Now wait, are you sure you're ready? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, for all you kids watching, it's very dangerous. Let's not try this at home, all right? Okay.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Oh, it's good for you. It's good.
Mom, forgive me.
Swallow, swallow, swallow. Oh, 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 danger, Will Robinson. Danger. Oh, God. Definite shotgun potential.
What am I?
Oh, for a beginner, it's amazing what you just did.